Welcome to Charged Up Studio Live, where small business owners get charged up for success. Are you a small business owner? Do you find yourself struggling through the many responsibilities that come with the title entrepreneur? Well, we're here for you. Charged Up Studio is hosted by Market Academy LLC, your prescription for what we call OPA. What is OPA? It's when you become so overwhelmed with the confusion that comes with business ownership that you become paralyzed and ultimately avoid doing anything in hopes it will take care of itself or you put it off till later. Does that sound familiar? I'm your host, Dan Olivo, and each week we bring a business professional eager to charge you up as they talk about the many things that keep you from moving forward with your small business. So are you ready to get charged up for success? Let's hit it. So welcome back to Charged Up Studio, where we uncover the hidden gems of business success and learn from industry experts. I'm Dana Olivo, your host, and today we are kicking off our Season 5 monthly focus on the digital leap, navigating the future of business transformation. Over the past decade, podcasting has evolved from a niche hobby to a powerful platform for content creators and entrepreneurs to share their stories, knowledge, and the ideas of the world. But what makes podcasting such an appealing small business option? Whether you're a seasoned entrepreneur looking for new ventures or someone with a passion and expertise you want to share, podcasting offers a unique pathway to success. From building a loyal audience to monetizing your content, there's a world of possibilities waiting for you in the podcasting landscape. This week's special guest on Charged Up Studio is a compliance expert and has authored 19 books on business leadership, compliance and ethics, and corporate governance. However, today, he will be talking to us about the world of podcasting, the benefits, features, and possibilities. A podcaster in his own right, he has all of the tips and the know-how on what it takes to start your own podcasting venture. Let's all give a Charged Up Studio welcome to Mr. Thomas Fox, the compliance evangelist. Welcome, Tom.
Thanks, Dana. Great to be here.
I'm glad you're here, too. So, you know, having just kicking off our fifth season of Charged Up Studio, I've been involved for the last probably 5 years in the podcasting world. So I'm interested to hear what you have to add to this whole realm here. I got into podcasting primarily as a tool, a branding tool for my business. So let's get started. Before we do get started, I always ask my guests one simple question that provides an opportunity for our audience to get to know you. So are you ready for this?
Sure.
Okay. If you were to go back and confront your younger self, what sage advice would you give him and at what age?
You know, I get that question a fair amount. And here's the answer. Nothing. There's absolutely nothing I could have said to any age of myself that would have made any difference.
Or that you
was so I was so much smarter then. I'm younger than that now, to quote Bob Dylan. Nothing.
You know, it's I hear this all the time, and I like to think that I'm hitting on something different here, but it's amazing the responses that I get to this question. Everything from what you just said, they wouldn't change anything, to the fact that, you know, I probably wouldn't have listened to myself in the first place. You know,
oh, it's not that I wouldn't have changed things. I made a lot of mistakes.
Yeah.
But there's nothing I could have said.
Right.
I think when I was 25.
Well, anyway, so, you know, that's it kind of gives us a little bit of an understanding of, you know, hey, What can I say? I mean,
Yeah.
it took me 50 some odd years to learn what I was doing wrong half the time. So, whether it comes late or early, at least it comes.
Yep.
So anyway, so let's go ahead and let's get started and dive right in. So before we get started, can you go ahead and give us a little bit of an explanation on your journey into the podcasting arena?
Sure, if I could start, my professional background is I'm a lawyer by professional training. I'm a recovering trial lawyer. I did that for 25 years and I went into the in-house world, became a general counsel, sort of the in-house thing. In 2010, I went off to start a journey in private practice, focusing on legal and regulatory compliance, which you mentioned. And as part of that journey, I started blogging and using social media. And it through that, I built a worldwide consulting practice. And the podcasting was a natural extension of blogging. So I started podcasting in 2012. I would say similar to your experience as branding, although in 2012, I'm not sure I knew what branding was. I just did it. So I'm pretty much think up something and do it kind of person. And podcasting was the next step from blogging. So that's why I started podcasting in 2017. I got the bright idea that I would start a podcast network around legal and regulatory compliance. So I went around to all of the big players in my space. There were two nonprofits or two for-profits and one nonprofit and said, hey, let's create a podcast network and we will be a one-stop shop resource in the compliance arena for in a podcast format, not other formats. And I could get no interest. So I just did it on my, I said, bleep it. I'll just do it myself. And I did. And it blew up on me during the pandemic because by that time I had a the largest social media presence in compliance. And I realized what I had was a distribution platform. And I was able to get the message out for product and service providers in the compliance space during the pandemic when they could not, because there were no trade shows, conferences, breakfast roundtables, the traditional methods of marketing, at least in the compliance arena. So since that time, I've just tried to consolidate the growth, explosive growth I sustained, and see where I can take my. I now have two podcast networks as well. I have a rural podcast network, but that's a different business model.
Well, it's interesting, and I love when you were talking about that your podcast you realized became a distribution network. Okay? And this is another way of looking at podcasting. Like I said, myself with Charged Up Studio, the podcasting came in as a branding effort. It was just an extension of the different resources that I provide through Marketatomy. So it was never really intended to monetize, make money. It was primarily made to, bring those resources like yourself to my audience who might be thinking about starting a podcast, or who may be thinking about, or they may be getting ready to drop out of corporate America because they're reaching retirement age, but they have to still make some money, in
Right.
order to support retirement. So those are the kind of things that my audience members are always struggling with is, okay, what is the next step? Where do I go from here? Not just in podcasting, but where do I go from here if I'm retiring and I have to make extra money?
So the reason I started my own consulting practice in 2010 was because I'd been laid off 18 months before. My company got sold and my job went away. And so I went off on this great adventure to race bicycles and I had a lot of fun. I
Yes.
was over 50. I could ride in the senior division until one day I was hit by a Hummer on a training ride. So that
Oh.
ended my cycling career and I had to go back to work. And what I learned from that, one of the key things I learned from that experience is really touches on what you just said, Dana, which is when the universe closes one door, another opens. Now, I knew that, but what I didn't fully appreciate is you have to have the courage to walk through that door.
That's true.
Well, because I was laid up and had nothing to do, I actually had that courage to
Yeah.
walk through that door and start the consulting practice. And that's what I did when I started my podcast network as it grew as well. So it's anyone can do this, from the literally the 19-year-old who's just graduated from college to the I founded my podcast network when I was 61.
Oh.
Anyone can do it.
That's true. That's
Yeah,
true.
so whatever age you are, you have something to contribute.
Yeah.
And you just need to figure out if your business people like you and I are you going to use your podcast from a business perspective? If so, there's a variety of reasons. But passion projects can be just as powerful.
Right.
I've met numerous people at podcast conferences who podcast about everything from, forbidden sex to PTSD and veterans to recovery to solitude for new moms
Yeah.
and everything in between. And it's a passion project, but it's not so much that they have a voice. They do have a voice, but there are others out there who want to hear those voices.
Right.
And they love the podcast format because it's so intimate. And it took me a long time to understand the intimacy. And I don't mean a, obviously a sexual intimacy. I mean, it's a very intimate way. There's some of my favorite podcasts I listen to where I can literally tell from the voice inflection, the expression on their faces, and I've never seen them.
Right.
It's if radio is theater of the imagination, podcasting is the most intimate way to communicate I'm aware of.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, like I said, 5 years, and I can probably count on one hand the number of podcasts that didn't go well. Because I've got, gosh, I want to say over 300 podcasts online right now. And you're absolutely right. The intimacy that comes out when you're discussing or just communicating through podcasting, you're having a dialogue. It's like talking to a friend. It's like talking to somebody that you've just met one-on-one or something. The difference is with podcasting is you can decide whether what the subject matter is going to be. You can decide what the subject matter is going to be. You can decide how you're going to approach it, those kind of things. But those podcasts that really, I find generate more interest are those that are not scripted, that are not necessarily, following a strict guideline, but it's more of a dialogue between the two.
Right.
Wouldn't you agree?
Well, I do perhaps a combination of both because I provide an outline to every one of my podcast guests for two reasons. One, I want to give them a general sense of the direction of the pod. Two, I'm not a journalist. I'm not here to play gotcha. No surprises from Tom Fox. You know what I'm going to ask you.
Yeah.
And if there's something you don't want to talk about, that's fine. Just tell me.
Yeah.
So I use that, but I reserve the right to go full geek and go down any rabbit
That's
hole, and I'm a
true.
full
That's
geek.
true. Yeah.
I tell people I have two criteria and two criteria only for a successful podcast. Number one, how much did I learn? And number two, how much fun did I have?
Yeah.
That's it.
That's it.
And people say, well, that's pretty selfish. I'm like, you're right, it is. But here's the business point. Because if I really enjoy myself on a podcast, that comes across.
It
And
does.
that's what listeners want. They want to engage in that enjoyment, and they will.
Yeah.
So they say people come for the guest, but they stay for the host. So
No,
I
you're
try to
absolutely right. You're absolutely
bring
right. That
that.
passion. That
Right.
passion comes through, that excitement comes through, and that's what keeps them coming, coming back for more and more, So, let's talk a little bit about many podcasters, in business or just starting out or whatever. They wonder about the costs involved. Let's talk a little bit about the minimum costs that they could get involved with starting a podcast and what you could expand to if you wanted to really beef up your podcast. Let's talk a little bit
Sure.
about that.
So, costs are minimal.
Yeah.
The biggest cost and your biggest expense when you start should be a microphone, a quality microphone, because audio quality matters. And you could spend anywhere from $100 to $400 on a microphone. Now, I have all the cool toys. So I, spend at the top end, but you don't have to do that to start. I'm a Mac guy. So there's recording software on a Mac. You don't have to buy that. If you and I are on Zoom, you can record on Zoom. There's software recording you, excuse me, recording software you can purchase, or license rather. And I do that too. But if you use Zoom, it's however much your Zoom is a year, and then a microphone, and that's it. It
Yeah.
can be that cheap. And so it could be $300 to $400 a year. I've spent a lot more because I have a lot more toys. And then part of my story is in 2019, I took the year off from practicing law to fully concentrate on my podcast network. And I wanted to see if it was a viable business. And so I bought all the cool toys. I built this huge network out. And at the end of the year, I'd made about $10,000. And I thought, well, that was an interesting experiment. I guess I have to go
That's a
back to
hobby.
practicing
That
law.
was a
Yeah.
hobby.
So I moved it back to hobby status. And what happened was they shut the country down about March 15. And literally May 15, I got a call from every product provider in the compliance space with the same question,
Right.
which was how long to get access to your network? Well, because of all the money I'd spent in 2019, my answer was 24 hours. It
Wow.
was built. And so it
That's
was just literally a drop and drag or a plug and play. And so my little world exploded, and that's what I've been trying to consolidate that growth since that time.
Excellent. When I originally had gotten started in podcasting, I had gone the more expensive route. I had a producer, in the whole bit. And this was back in 2019, end of 2018. So I had a producer, I had a studio, everything that I was doing it in. And then what happened was COVID. And so I had to bring everything back home and work out of my house. So that reduced the costs and everything. But one thing that we didn't talk about, and I think it's important to stress, if you're going to go into the podcasting business, your internet connection is extremely important because I have your home-based internet, 9 times out of 10 is not going to work. I've had to go out and bring business internet into my home in order to keep the drag because it might have looked fine for me on one side, but on the other side, all they saw was static. So it's important to understand that yes, your internet connection is going to play a big part in how well your podcast is received as well, right?
Right. And I know that from personal experience because 3 years ago, my wife and I relocated from Houston to rural West Texas.
Yeah.
And the house we moved in did not have high-speed internet. I had to get a satellite dish, and it wasn't that it was a near disaster. It just took forever to upload and hours.
Right.
And it slowed down my production to the point where I was pulling my hair out. So I absolutely know whence you speak.
That's where the geekness comes in, huh?
Right.
Understanding all of this. I know just enough to be dangerous, and it's all from lessons learned, as far as that's concerned. So
Right.
let's talk about the monetization aspect. A lot of business owners, they want to get into podcasting and they want to be able to monetize their podcasts. Okay. Let's talk about the different ways, first of all, that they can monetize and the challenges they're going to face trying to do this.
Sure. So, first of all, I would have to say the smaller you are, the bigger you'll be. And I know that sounds counterintuitive, but what I mean to say is the more niche you are in your podcast, the bigger you're going to be. So, legal and regulatory compliance, I knew was never going to be big. I have a lot of different podcasts covering that topic. And more importantly, is the every product provider knows that I have the biggest social media presence. So that's number one. Number two is I tell people the most important thing is your promise. I'm a big fan of mysteries and thrillers, and I heard the author James Patterson once say, so the interviewer said, what's your brand? And he put his hand out like he was offering to shake it with the interviewer. And he said, that's your brand. Your brand is your promise to your audience. As James Patterson, my promise to you is I will give you a thriller. Now, if I want to write a rom-com, I can, but I have to tell you, this is not a James Patterson thriller. This is a rom-com. So that when people pick up a James Patterson book, they know what they get. And that translates 100% in the podcast world. People know they're going to get a podcast from me about compliance on a specific cadence. Once a week, twice a month, once a month, once a quarter, whatever it is, it doesn't matter, but it's my promise that every Monday you're going to get the compliance report and Tom Fox talking about compliance. So it really starts with those two things. And once you set those parameters and your audience knows what to expect, then you have something you can sell. And what I learned from the distribution platform was, I hate to be so trite to say it's location, 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 but it's location, location, location. In the podcast world, that just happens to be the audio format. So, number one, how many places could you put an ad in your podcast? Most people talk about an intro, a middle, mid-roll, and an outro. Well, you can do that, but there's more to a podcast than simply the audio. There's show notes. Why don't you put something in your show notes? Do you send out a weekly, monthly, or other newsletter about your podcast? That's location. You can have an ad at the top. You can add an ad at the bottom. Do you create a blog post based upon your podcast? I do all of those things, and those all provide me with locations I can put information on. So I can have a sponsor of an individual episode. I can have a sponsor of my podcast. I can have a sponsor of my newsletter. I can have a sponsor of my podcast network site. I can charge an appearance fee for someone to come on my podcast, or I can create podcast for a product provider in the compliance space where they can talk about what they want to talk about. So those are some of the ways I'm able to monetize, but it's because I'm so niche that every product provider in compliance knows if they want to reach the compliance audience in the podcast format, I'm the guy. And so whatever your niche is, that's what you can play to. It may be summer wear in Tampa. How much more niche can you get than that? Now in Tampa, that may be 9, 10 months out of the year, but it's a very niche market, and companies that have summer wear clothes, whether it's casual, whether it's dressy casual, whether it's go to the country club, but for that type of weather, somebody's going to want to advertise on your space.
Well, with mine, in the service provider or the platform that I'm streaming from, or not streaming from, but who hosts my podcast, let's put it that way, they bring the advertisers in. I just tell them where I want it, and they match the advertisers. So that helps out tremendously on that part. I know you from did was I did we get to know each other through C-Suite? Okay. So it's C-Suite's platform there, that works that way. Now, the other thing that we probably want to talk about is the knowing your audience, okay? Who your audience is. Like, I know my audience is small micro business owners under 10 employees, under $3 million in revenue, those kind of things. But when you talk about compliance and things like that, your audience are more than likely, and correct me if I'm wrong, going to be other compliance experts. Those, it's not going to be your general public per se, is it?
So my audience breaks down as follows. About 40% 40% corporate compliance professionals,
Okay.
40% other business executives, CFOs, CEOs, head of internal audit, head of HR, et cetera, and about 20% legal types, both in private practice and those in-house. And then within the industry or industry verticals, my top five audiences are financial services, banking, tech, healthcare, and for reasons completely unknown to me, automotive. So I get pretty good numbers and information on who's listening. So because I'm so bit, I'm a B2B podcast network, people who want to talk to other business professionals, they come to me. But your market is equally valid and equally important because that is the market micro businesses and entrepreneurs at, I mean, I'm 3 million and under, and I'm a solo guy in several different businesses. So I'm exactly your audience for what you're talking about. And that's a great way to demonstrate the power of niche. I would say you're as niche as I am.
No, and my audience, primarily, we like to call them accidental entrepreneurs a lot of time, especially with, COVID and things like that. They were forced into entrepreneurship because they either were their jobs were gotten rid of, or or something, and most of them, the reason what I bring to the table is they don't know what they don't know when it comes to launching and growing a small business. And in order to do that, they need the skills, the teaching and the skills base that we're trying to bring with Market Academy and Charged Up Studio. I do some compliance work with the federal government when I'm working with my clients, and we're talking about federal compliance and and things like that. And that stuff is boring, and I won't say the last word, but that stuff is so boring, but it's so important. There are compliance things that we have to follow when it comes to podcasting. And so as a business owner, if you're going to get into podcasting, you need to understand what are the rules and regulations. What do you need to understand when doing that? So let's talk just a little bit, since you're in that realm. Just give us a couple of compliance regulations issues that we should be paying attention to if we're going to get into the podcasting industry.
They're not new and they're not limited to podcasts. They're extensions of things that have been around for years. So copyright. If I write an article and I quote you, an article you've written, now if I just take your article and cite it, that's plagiarism. But if I say Dana said, quote, blah, 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 end quote, that's perfectly fair. And that's the way you're supposed to cite to someone. The same is true in podcasting. If I take that same article and I read what you have written as if I wrote it or said it, that's plagiarism. But if I say, Dana said in this article, I could even give the cite to the article title or the magazine it's in, quote, 1, 2, 3, 4, end quote, that's perfectly acceptable. So number one is plagiarism. Number two, and sort of related to that, is how much are you using AI in your production process? Now, I use AI to help summarize podcasts.
Me too.
But if you use AI to generate articles, you don't know if AI has plagiarized someone else. And there's, I mean, the New York Times filed a lawsuit last week over that, claiming that ChatGPT was plagiarized New York Times articles without proper citation. So,
They've got about 12 different cases going on right now
right.
involving that.
So that's to me really the biggest one. I can talk about the business side of podcasting and contracting because that's the other life I live in. But there's a few good podcast lawyers. I'm happy to recommend them. I am not one of them. If you want to make podcasting your business, but I guess the other thing I might maybe, and this is what I was really excited to visit with you about because of your audience and your expertise with the entrepreneurs is I have a second podcast network, and it's a rural podcast network for the rural part of West Texas I live in, called the Texas Hill Country Podcast Network. And my vision was, I live in a town or near a town of 20,000 people, and we have no TV, we have no local radio, we have internet radio, and we have a 3-day-a-week newspaper. And it was $500 for an ad in a newspaper. And I know that because I bought one for my Hill Country
That is
podcast.
rural. That is
Yeah.
rural.
I said, well, I can produce podcasts for cheaper than that. So I got together with some other guys, and we started a Texas Hill Country Podcast Network. And we're going around to local businesses in this town of 20,000 people saying, come do a podcast twice a month. Number one, you'll get a podcast out of it. But the thing about podcasting and why I find it so powerful, Dana, is it generates so much content.
Yes.
So I get three video clips or audio clips called audiograms or videograms at 1 minute or less for Twitter. I get one at 2 minutes or less for LinkedIn. My home county is 68% over 65. So it's very mature, but that means they use Facebook. So our
Yes.
podcast network is on Facebook of all places,
That's true.
because that's where our audience is. There may be other audiences, you choose other platforms, but for, the people listening to my podcast network, the rural one, they're on Facebook. So that's easy.
Right.
But podcasting can give every entrepreneur, 5 to 8 collateral pieces of social media marketing that they
Right.
can use on Facebook, Instagram, if they want to go TikTok, any of those they can use, and they can exponentially increase their audience reach and use those in any kind of marketing they choose to use, whether it be on social media, whether it be an email newsletter, whether it be an ad somewhere with a QR code, it doesn't matter. And that once you've created that podcast, you can slice and dice that in ways that you're only limited by your imagination. So what we're trying to educate people in our little hometown is this can be the start of a social media marketing content creation machine for you.
Right.
And we've taken some very small entrepreneurs and exponentially increased their marketing just from that.
Now, that brings me to a question I have for you as an attorney, regulation compliance. I don't know if you have this answer, but I get a guest release form signed
Yes.
before each podcast from every guest. And the reason being is because I use these podcasts as marketing tools. So if we're going to be marketing it through social media and things like that, I need my guests to understand that's what we're doing. So what are your thoughts as far as that is concerned?
Well, as a lawyer, I can only say God bless you.
I am surprised at how many of my guests say, I am so excited that you have given me a guest release form. How
Well,
many people don't do that? Yeah.
not only did you give me a guest release form, I now have a guest release form because I stole yours. So that's how good it is.
There you
Because
go.
here I am, a lawyer, never
Yeah.
have yourself as a client, because I didn't do any of that. And you're absolutely right. You are absolutely protected by that now. I appreciated that as a lawyer. I appreciated, number one, because you took the time to do it. And that communicates to me a level of seriousness and professionalism on your end. But it also, a contract is there to set expectations. Sure, you talk about, compensation or other things in contracts, but it's really there to set your expectations between the parties. And they teach you that day one in law school, and that's what you've done. So I applaud you for that. I'm going to incorporate that into
No,
my,
that's fine. Go ahead. Borrow it. Do what you
but
need
yeah,
to. But I tell you
absolutely.
what, yeah, no. So talking about, the professionalism and things like that, one of the things that I know through podcasting is consistency plays a key in your podcast, the success of your podcasting business. I have Tuesdays is my drop day for all of my new podcasts. I pre-record and I edit. So I have an editor that edits them, wraps them, things like that. So you know, it's important that we have that consistency. If you say that you're going to drop your podcast, air your podcast every Tuesday or whatever, you want to make sure that you're doing it every Tuesday. If you're going to take time off in between seasons, which I always take, you know, 2, 3 weeks between seasons to kind of build up my podcast plan for the next year or the next season, it's important that you let them know ahead of time so that they know. Right?
That absolutely. That's what I was talking about with cadence
Yeah.
and James Patterson branding. You can do whatever you want. Just tell your audience and
Yeah.
be fair with them and let it let set their expectations, because then you've set them and you meet them.
Right. Exactly. So, what podcasting tools and technology, and they've all involved, what do you think are some that we really should be considering as a potential podcaster or an existing podcaster wanting to enhance our appearance? What are some of the tools that you can recommend?
Sure. So if you're going to, I would say the first step is recording software. And there I would recommend one of the three following: Restream, Riverside, or Descript. It used to be called Squadcast, but Descript bought Squadcast. Though I have them all and I use them all. The editing software for the transcript or the creation of social media assets is Descript. I use Descript. There's another one called Podflow that I use to summarize my podcast. So those are the primary ones that I use.
Yeah, those are all tools and everything. That's great. What I have found after 4 going on 5 seasons is I don't have the time to do it myself anymore. So at that point, that's where you start reaching out to your experts to do it for you. Like I have an editor, and they're gig workers. Okay, I have an editor that will edit it for me. And then I have somebody else who manages the digital marketing for me and the content creation for the website, you know, and all of this stuff. So, you know, and then you and I both are Mac, right? Mac
Right.
people. Okay. I use Camtasia if I need to do any kind of, you know, I find I like that, but I like recording through Zoom.
Right.
You know, it's just easy. I can change backgrounds. I can do what I need to. You know, I just find it so much easier than what is it, StreamYard? I've used StreamYard before. I don't like that. I've used all kinds of them, and I
Right.
just haven't liked them at all. So, but it's really a matter of preference. It's a
It
matter of
is.
preference and ease. Yeah.
Everyone has their own little eccentricities, and so it's kind of which eccentricity you like. I like Riverside because they can create clips for me very easily. Descript, I have to create the clips, but the beauty is then I create the clips I want, and I know what the guest has said. So Descript is a very powerful tool.
Yeah, I'll let my editor do it for me.
Right.
Let my editor do it for me. So, let's geek out of here a little bit, okay? When we're talking about the podcast, are there any platforms or places that our listeners can go to if they're considering doing a podcast, but they want to find out what the audience members are interested in? Is there anywhere where they can go to get some information, some research data to help them decide what they want to do?
You know, I would say do not do that because, and I have to draw on my experience. I've never looked at that. I
Neither
only do
have I.
what I want because I bring that passion to it when I want to do it. And so I think if you start trying to figure out what the market wants, you can go down a lot of rabbit holes, but do what you want. Because if you do what you want, you'll be committed to it.
I had I had a podcast guest on one time. My first book that I ever wrote is called Market Atomy: What to Expect When Expecting a Business. And it's really a thin little tiny book, but it's all about there's an entrepreneur in every one of us. And there's somebody out there that wants to know the expertise that we bring to the table as that entrepreneur. So I agree with you. I don't do a lot of that. I do now that I'm on YouTube because my video goes on YouTube and I'll watch my metrics on there and I know, okay, what's attracting the audience, you know, which ones are, you know, I've got one. Unfortunately, I wouldn't say unfortunately, surprisingly, my federal procurement one is the one that is just flying with views and you know, constant streaming, you know. And that one was recorded almost 4 years ago, and it's still capturing the audience. It's just amazing, you know. So you never know what the audience really needs. You know, I just thought I'd throw that question out there to see if maybe you might have a platform that you use, you know.
No, oh, and let me give you this example. I'm a huge Star Trek fan. So I did the full 79 episodes of Star Trek, the original series, in a podcast series called Trekking Through Compliance, where I analyzed each episode from the compliance angle. And they're relatively short, 10 to 15 minutes. I did it in 2017. And I ran it in the summer, starting June 1, 79 straight days. Every summer, I have rerun that series, and every year the numbers increase. So I have no clue why. You might think after 6 years, the audience would be tapped out, but apparently not.
It's, you know, it's my husband and I went to a concert Tuesday. This is, it's along the same lines, but it's not, okay, it's not podcasting. Went to a concert. I don't know if you know who Jesse Cook is.
No, I do
He's
not.
a flamenco guitarist, okay? And he was taught, he told us a story about during COVID, okay, he had this special one song that he does. It's called Just Say Yes. All right. And that was the name of the song. And he thought, oh, this is a great song, you know, and stuff like that. And he'd been, it had been running about 3 years. Okay. And he said during COVID, when he couldn't, you know, do concerts or anything like that, he would stay home and every week he would take his songs and he would restructure them a little bit. And then every Friday he'd release that song again online on YouTube. And he says, one thing I found is just say yes turned out to be just say no because it did not attract the attention that I thought it was. So until you get it out there in front of them, you're not going to really know what's going to attract the attention of the audience.
Right.
You know, so it's really kind of funny. So, let's see. So beyond the financial rewards, what are some of the personal and professional benefits you experienced as a podcasting entrepreneur?
As a podcasting entrepreneur, the professional benefits I get are probably the biggest and most important thing. And here's the reason. I spend all day interviewing the top experts in the compliance realm, in every way, shape, and form. And so I have a picture of compliance that literally is both at 30,000 feet and underground into the weeds. And I'm able to see things that other people can't see, not because I have X-ray vision, but it's because I've been talking to everybody and I can put it together in a way that no one else can. And, one thing you said a little bit earlier, I do need to correct. I'm actually on my 29th book. And
Goodness.
those podcasts are what gives me the insight and, more importantly, the material to
Yeah.
crank out three or four books a year in compliance with new and fresh information. Because pretty early I learned that if you give me a word, I can give you a sentence. If you give me a sentence, I can give you a paragraph. If you give me a paragraph, I can give you an blog post. If you give me a blog post, I can give you a white paper. And if you give me a white paper, I can give you a chapter of a book. Well, that same concept works in podcasting, except that the podcast subs in for the blog post. So I take the information from those podcasts, and I'm on the fifth edition rather, of the Top Compliance Handbook in Anti-Corruption Compliance. And I get 20 to 30% new material every year. And because I write a blog post based upon a podcast, it's relatively easy for me to insert it, and I'll deliver the next manuscript to the to the publisher by the end of this month. So I'm able to see and hear, see things in a way other people can't. I'm endlessly curious and a lifelong learner. And so that's what podcasting has given me professionally.
No, definitely. I agree with you. You know, there's so much I learned from all of the guests that I have on the show, you know, and things like that. As the podcasting landscape continues to evolve, okay, what trends or developments do you see on the horizon that we should be made aware of?
If you, most people get sucked into, and I did as well, thinking about, I can only measure my podcast by downloads. And more importantly, the 1,000 CPMs equals $25, because that's the formula for how you get paid ad pay. Well, 1,000 downloads on a compliance podcast is actually pretty good.
Yeah. That's going to be excellent.
Pretty good. And so I realized early on that, you know, I'm not going to have 30,000 downloads a month. I might if I have 10 or 15 podcasts, but that's a lot of work. So I've struggled for many years to put together a coherent picture of the total reach of my podcast network. And finally, last year, I was able to do that. And so for every podcaster out there, do not worry about downloads. It's about your social media reach. So I post on Megaphone. That's my hosting platform. I have a compliance podcast network.
Yeah.
You know, every other platform, iHeartRadio, iTunes, Spotify, et cetera. I publish on platforms that aren't recognized, so I don't get credit for their downloads. Yeah. But there's still numbers that are hitting people. LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, daily newsletter, other email marketing. I have 500,000 to 600,000 touch points per month for my network. And so that, every podcaster needs to stop thinking about, well, I have 350 downloads. That's all I got. No,
yeah.
It's social media outreach. It is your video clips. It's your audiograms. It's Facebook. It's all of those places. And they don't have to listen to the whole thing. You know, if they've clicked through any period where it, you get any sort of count or time, and that includes YouTube, that's of value to you. So I'm trying, I finally put together a coherent set of auditable, transparent numbers. So that was the first thing. But now I'm trying to enlarge the conversation to get away from it's simply downloads based on this 1,000 CPM formula. It is, what's the reach of your podcast network? And if your reach is 500,000 touch points per month, you've got a huge reach. Yeah. And it's something that is of value, whether you choose to market it or you want to sell it.
Right. Right. No, you're absolutely right. You know, I think with my network, oh gosh, I couldn't even tell you what I got. LinkedIn alone, I've got over 60,000, I think.
Yeah.
You know, is just, and it gets posted to LinkedIn every single month, every month. You know, that doesn't count Facebook, TikTok, you know, all of that. So definitely. So we're coming up on the end of another episode of Charged Up Studio. And thank you, Tom, for joining us today and shedding light on how we can take advantage of podcasting as a business or a marketing tool. How can our listeners reach you should they wish to?
Sure. A variety of ways. I'm on LinkedIn at Thomas R. Fox. You can email me at tfox@tfoxlaw.com. I'm on the Compliance Podcast Network. That's compliant, www.compliancepodcastnetwork.net. You can send me a message that I have a message app on there. And I also have a message app on the Texas Hill Country Podcast Network. Reach out. I'd love to talk to you. If you have any questions about podcasting or you have any questions about compliance, yeah. I'd love to chat with you.
Very good. Thank you so much, Tom. So that concludes our podcast for today. Please leave a review on any of the streaming platforms you're listening to us on, or go to our Charged Up Studio Facebook page and leave a review there. Charged Up Studio is a product of Marketatomy and Marketatomy Academy, the e-learning system designed specifically with the micro business owner in mind. For more information and to register for our many courses, go to Marketatomy, MarketAtomy.academy, MarketAtomy.academy. And until next week, when we'll have another exciting guest join us on Charged Up Studio, all of you go out and have a charged up week. Again, Dana Olivo, your host of Charged Up Studio. You've been listening to Charged Up Studio Live, the podcast with you, the small business owner, in mind, with your host, Dana Olivo. Join us every Tuesday as we bring you valuable tips and insights into many of the topics you don't know about growing a successful business. Please leave us a review on any of the streaming platforms you are listening to, or visit us on the YouTube or Facebook page and leave a review, or subscribe so you don't miss another episode. You can also support us through Patreon by visiting our website, chargedupstudio.live, and click on the Patreon link. Until next week, go out and have a charged up week.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.